The PT Pintcast is sponsored by the Next Gen Institute of Physical Therapy, offering state-of-the-art certifications, orthopedic residency, and postdoctoral fellowship learning experiences, allowing participation from virtually anywhere in the U.S. We believe in moving the profession forward through novel, post-professional educational opportunities. We are the Next Gen of Physical Therapists. Enter promo code PTPintcast at checkout for 15% off of any product.
This is the PT Pintcast, a podcast that talks about physical therapy over beer, bringing together clinicians, researchers, and forward-thinking PTs in a show that's anything but boring.
Let there be beer!
This is the PT Pintcast with your host, Jimmy McKay.
Next episode of the PT Pintcast, we are live at the Arlington Rooftop in Arlington, Virginia. And now we're talking with, introduce yourselves and what you're drinking and how many you've had.
Cecily DiStefano, Vodka Tonic.
And Scott Epsley and Lagunitas, and I think we're the start of the third drink in.
Start of round three. And Jimmy McKay, Vodka Club, this is number three. So we're well lubricated. So we're talking PT at a PT pub night and a bunch of PT students. And I like this vibe because there's students and there's practicing PTs, and this is where I think myself as a student, you get to learn a lot that you don't get in the classroom. You get to have discussions with people. You get to ask real questions about people who are out there doing. So what does a PT student need to know that we don't, that you guys have seen in your practice and your experiences with students? What do we need to pay attention to?
Pretty much anything that you didn't learn in PT school.
So lots of stuff. Because we're taking notes and we're on Twitter and we're, you know, we pay attention to most stuff. But a lot of times I think we're inundated with information for 3 years, and it's hard to pick out what we definitely need to know and what stuff we can kind of gloss over. In an earlier episode, talked about how a lot of PT school curriculums in the United States anyway, and you went to PT school where?
In Australia. You know,
so it's probably different. We talk about how there's some stuff left over. Maybe curriculums aren't necessarily changing as fast as they maybe should. So maybe there's some stuff we can gloss over, but what are we missing out on that we don't have?
But the beautiful thing about the curriculums is that you're getting all the basic science, the basic knowledge. What you need is application. You gotta bridge that gap.
My biggest thing is that basic science has to be the key to everything that we do as physical therapists. If you don't understand how your exercise prescription affects things at a cellular level, if you don't understand what energy systems you're using, what neurotransmitter systems you're using, what neuropeptides are being released when we actually perform an intervention, then you really don't know what you're doing. And you need to be able to integrate that with your treatment modalities, your treatment techniques, and to be able to come up with an effective scientific hypothesis that is your treatment, as opposed to an idiosyncratic recipe.
And just really, picking something.
What we have right now is idiosyncratic recipes, and in my area in sports medicine, there's a plethora of those. You know, this is how you treat plantar fasciitis. This is how you treat shin splints. This is how you treat a stress fracture. But really, what's happening at a fascial level with plantar fasciitis? And I'm going to call it a plantar fasciosis. And I'm going to say that from ultrasound, I can tell you that really we're seeing changes within that fascia that are more akin to tendinosis. What's happening at a tendinosis level? What's being released in terms of proteoglycans? Do you really understand what's being released in terms of growth factors when we apply a therapeutic exercise intervention? Or do you just give eccentrics because that's what you heard, because that's what Håkan Alfredsson said to do? You know, there's a lot more to it than that. And so 80% of people will get better pretty much no matter what you do. So at that level, I say we overrate ourselves. You know, we think that we're getting people better, and 80% of people will get better, and they're gonna get better. It doesn't matter what you do. It doesn't matter whether you drink a beer upside down. You know, they're probably gonna get better.
Which would be but an awesome treatment to prescribe for somebody.
Yeah, does that cure hiccups or what? I don't know.
I think cortical regions.
Yeah,
good. Perfect, but I think what you're saying is that we should really be better diagnosticians, right?
Well, I mean, I think we need to understand how our intervention affects, you know, we need to link the basic science to our intervention.
But instead of just doing it because I read it in a book, it's protocol.
Because the 20% of people
who... Or because I read in an article that came out yesterday.
Right.
Understanding that.
Now I'm going to change what I do because I read an article that came out yesterday.
The 20% of people that don't get better, what are you going to do with them when they don't get better? Are you going to say that it's the patient's fault because they're not doing their home exercise program? Because blame the patient, that always works 10% of the time, all right?
I'm so now that's 10%. I'm going to send them to Scott
Epsley. Isn't that what you do already? And then,
true story.
Are you going to say to, you know, the other people, well, they're not suitable for physical therapy? Are you going to send them back to the orthopedic surgeon who really doesn't know what to do with them anyway because they're not a surgical case. But hey, if they come back three times, he'll operate on them because he's an orthopedic surgeon. So why not? And really, at that point, is that what we can do for our patients? Is that the extent of what we have to offer? No, we have a lot more to offer. And then you bring in the diagnostic aspects, and obviously, you know, that's my bent as a diagnostic sonographer and as somebody, you know, coming from Australia where I've been able to order x-rays and MRIs my whole career, and at Georgetown where I can order x-rays and MRIs, and I work very closely with our radiologists, and working in sports medicine, I do that all the time. How do we tie that into then developing a treatment paradigm and protocol and how, you know, approach that we're going to take with this patient from a clinical reasoning standpoint? How do we use our diagnosis skills, our diagnostic skills, to develop a clinical reasoning standpoint that's much more robust than just saying, here's a condition, this is how we treat it, here's a randomized controlled trial. I can show you a randomized controlled trial for and against anything you want. Just name it, I'll go and I'll search PubMed and I'll find something to support it.
Like, how do you integrate innovation into the diagnostic piece? Like real-time ultrasound, like...
I use that as part of every evaluation that I might do for, say, a shoulder or for, say, a tendon. And I think part of it is getting normative data. Part of it is understanding what does a normal tendon look like? What does a normal shoulder look like? What does a normal knee look like? So that when I come across something that looks a little bit different, I understand what looks a little bit different. But then coming to the point of understanding what you're seeing and how to interpret that. And that's part of the problem, is that we can see changes in on an MRI that are normal in asymptomatic cases. How do we interpret that? And we need more research to know what normal means. We can see changes on ultrasound over time that we might imply as healing. For instance, let's take PRP, you know, platelet-rich plasma, if you're not familiar with PRP, very common regenerative medicine technique being used. You take your blood, you spin it down, you take out the platelets, they have growth factors, you inject it back into the tissue, supposedly this is going to help heal. We have these hypoechoic areas, that's these dark areas in tendon on ultrasound that we see, that we say are pathologic. We inject the PRP, we see those areas change, we see them heal. Ostensibly heal, I'm going to, you know, use that in parentheses, over time. What does that really mean? Well, it doesn't really mean necessarily that it healed, because there are plenty of studies showing that those hypoechoic areas change in normative tendon over time with different types of things. We need to understand what we're actually interpreting when we see these things with our technology, and we don't have enough information to do that yet, but we are on the forefront of being able to do that. We see these patients, we see them all the time, and I think we have the opportunity to really work with this technology, and particularly to integrate this technology. We are musculoskeletal and movement experts. That is what we do as physical therapists. So let's really own that. And let's say, well, what does that mean? That means that I understand what I'm seeing when I see a movement dysfunction. Ultrasound is a great way of assessing movement dysfunction, timing of muscles, deep muscle structures like the deep multifidus, changes that occur in those. But we need to understand how we interpret that. The early research where we looked at how transversus and multifidus and those things function. And Hodges and Hides and Joel and Richardson and the people that I studied under at the University of Queensland, that I was very lucky. When we look at that early research, we've come to a much fuller understanding now. We say, well, you know what? In chronic cases, these things don't necessarily apply like they do in acute cases. And there are changes that occur from a motor programming standpoint that occur over time that don't necessarily lend themselves to rehabilitation from necessarily an isolationist approach. So we need to understand when one thing applies and when something else doesn't apply. And again, these are all questions, but these are questions that you guys, that PT students that are the future of our profession, that you can own. These are questions that you can get answers to, that you can move our profession forward. But we've got to see ourselves as experts. We've got to believe that we are experts, and then we've got to live up to that. You know, it's no good to say that we're an expert, but then to perform at a mediocre level. You know, there is no diagnostic test or skill or ability that you don't have that an orthopedic surgeon has. You have every aspect of imaging available to you that he has, and you have every physical test available to you that he has. Do you think you can be as good as he can? You should be. Why aren't you? Get to that level and believe it. And
so that's my
level.
Question is, how can we bridge that gap and get that knowledge from the level that you're talking about to the next gen.
Hang on, I need more beer.
Amen.
Scott, real
beer
quick,
break.
Talk about what brought you to the U.S.?
A new challenge. You know, I own two clinics in Australia. I was working with a national program, and I had a number of professional athletes that were here in the U.S. that encouraged me to come out here. And at that point, I wanted a new challenge. I wanted to see what a different environment was like. And, you know, I love it here. I really have enjoyed the culture. I've enjoyed, the
amazing colleagues that you've been engaged with.
Absolutely.
Any particular sport population that you prefer over another?
I'm very lucky. I've worked with a whole bunch of elite athletes from a massive wide range of sports, from professional basketball to elite swimmers to professional sprinters to an IndyCar driver. And I could say that every sport offers its own unique challenge. The difference between working with a professional basketball player to working with, say, a collegiate basketball player is quite vast. And the way that you have to approach those people and the opportunity that you get in terms of rehabilitation and support and also the facilities that you have, all of those things vary. So every sport offers its own unique challenge. Obviously, you know, working with a professional cyclist is very different to working with an IndyCar driver. They're all very different, but a lot of people will specialize in one sport or one area, which is great. I've been very lucky to work at an elite level across a vast, and I love the challenge. Some sports are more biomechanical, cycling, looking at bike fit and how that equates to injury. Throwing is a very biomechanical sport, and some sports, are a little less biomechanical, say rugby league or, rugby union or different football codes and things like that, where it's a more gross movement pattern and you're looking at injuries that are more extrinsic from contact versus
tackles.
Versus intrinsic injuries that are more biomechanically generated.
This is the PT Pinecast.
Coming October 1st, Next Gen PT TV, an affordable subscription-based video platform designed by PTs for PTs. Access and watch clinically relevant content for as low as $7.95 a month. With channels ranging from orthopedic prep to applied pain sciences, you'll be sure to find a channel for you. Next Gen PT TV. More information at nxtgenpt.tv. On Twitter at nxtgeninstitute. Next Gen PT TV. Coming October 1st.
Taking IPAs over TKAs. It's the PT Pinecast.
Question for both of you guys. I'm sure you guys have come across students in your career. Where are we lacking in terms of DPT, now the transition to the DPT? Are we headed in a good direction now that we're doing that?
You know, in terms of where we're headed, I think definitely the people we're turning out are good. DPT is definitely the right way to go. We're moving in the right direction. I mean, our environment has never been so rich. We have the whole global faction, right? We're bringing in global, we're now with technology, we could be all over the world.
Yeah,
and we're pulling in, we can talk to people in Australia, we can talk to people in South Africa, we can talk to experts all over the world.
I'm here.
Whatever it is, and thank goodness for that.
That's my question, because everybody I've ever talked to who's been to Australia has never had a bad thing to say about it.
Must
be because we're awesome over here.
True story.
That you would actually leave.
True story. We're doing great things here, right? Transformative things, actually. So we're moving in the right direction. We're transforming society. I think one of the things that's beautiful is that the people coming out of PT school are so innovative. I definitely think we're moving in the right direction with regard to innovation. I think we need to work on that, bridging the gap between mentorship. So we have all this great knowledge and we're all very, we have great clinical skills, we have great research coming out, we have great practice and education is stepping up. But what I think we need is that 1 to 5 year out, we need to work on bridging the gap between the seasoned practitioners and those coming out of school to make sure that there's a lot of mentoring happening in both directions. Because you can learn a lot from your students, as we well know, because they are on the forefront of all the science. They've just been taught all of the things that are coming out. And then you have your practice practicing clinicians that have all the experience with the innovative technologies that they're using in practice every day, and we need to bridge that gap. We need to take our passion and we need to share it with one another with good communication, and now, again, with technology, we can do that in ways like we're doing right now with you.
Yeah. I mean, I'll be vulnerable right here. As a student who's going to be licensed PT in about a year, I'm a little scared because I've had the education for the basic science. I'm going through clinical experience right now, but as I go through it, when I get into that eval room, believe me, my eyes go gigantic and I go white when it's time to make a decision because I don't want to make the wrong decision.
That's the pressure, right?
That's my hang-up. I have a person in front of me who has an issue, who's paying good money, who's sought help, and I get nervous because I haven't had enough experience taking that basic science and applying it yet because I sat in a classroom for, you know, the last 2 years. So when will I get comfortable with that? Am I an anomaly? Am I just a bad PT student?
No, you're not an anomaly.
You're absolutely not an anomaly.
I remember sitting in a bar not dissimilar to this in Brisbane in 1998, the night before I graduated, saying to my buddy, tomorrow we're expected to be physiotherapists. We're expected to know exactly what to do. And today we couldn't touch a patient without checking in with our tutor and making sure. I didn't learn anything overnight that's changing
today.
That. And so you're not an anomaly. That's normal. That's exactly normal. Here's what I say to you guys coming out of school. There's such an emphasis, particularly in the United States, on going and getting a certification or going and doing a residency or going and taking this course or that course. And there are so many different schools of thought and ways that you can approach physical therapy, and people have developed whole programs around these. What I tell students is the first 6 to 12 months, don't take a course. And they get shocked at me. They say, but I come out knowing nothing. That's how I'm going to learn. And I say, you need to develop your paradigm of how you think the body works. You need to understand how you integrate the neural system, the musculoskeletal system, the systemic immune system, the autonomic nervous system. How does that all fit together? And I'm still refining how I believe that all fits together in my career, 17 years down the track.
Lifelong.
It never stops. It's a constant process of refining that because we continually learn more and know more and understand more. And then once you have a model, once you have a paradigm of how you think the body,
your paradigm,
because your paradigm doesn't have to be mine. And I really believe that, you know, we can get the same result and have a different paradigm, but you have to have a paradigm. Then identify where you feel that your knowledge base is lacking within your paradigm, and then seek courses that fill those gaps. People ask me as a sports therapist, what joint do you specialize in? I don't specialize in any joint. I specialize in every joint. That's what I have to do, you know, when I'm treating a professional athlete. I have to know about every joint.
So tell me about pelvic. You do pelvic health as well?
I do the orthopedic aspect of pelvic health.
Sorry, Sarah.
And then I leave the rest to Carrie Pagliano. But my point there...
I just mean that's forgotten. Like, people forget.
An athlete that comes in with osteitis pubis or pubic bone stress injury is likely to have a pelvic health problem.
FAI.
And you need to ask about that. An athlete with FAI is likely to have a pelvic health problem, and you need to ask them about
that. That's getting back to being a movement expert.
Exactly. Optimizing movement.
Exactly. But, you know, I have a very central paradigm. I believe that, you know, no brain, no pain. You know, I believe that everything stems centrally. You know, our nervous system is a key to our immune system. There's a lot of evidence for that. Our nervous system is a key to even the health of our skin. You see people with, you know, neural compression system syndromes that get skin breakdown distal to the neural compression. I mean, you know, the nervous system is key. Absolutely. And so, you know, I treat with that paradigm, and that's how I think, that's how I work. I would never treat a hamstring injury without treating the lumbar and thoracic spine. I never do. That's all ways how I treat. But you have to have your paradigm. Whatever your paradigm is, find that paradigm and then figure out where your gaps are so that you feel that you are confident in saying that I am a musculoskeletal specialist, not a shoulder specialist or a hand specialist. I'm a musculoskeletal specialist.
But that's where the team is so important too, because like you pointed out, if there are areas where you feel like you need someone who has different expertise, you need to have a good team and an innovative model, a practice model that supports that, where you have people who can, you know, who you can refer to or you can ask and bring
Absolutely.
In on the team.
Absolutely. And your team includes your medical practitioners.
Absolutely.
It includes your exercise scientists, your personal trainers, your massage therapists, even a chiropractor, dare I say it. And there's this whole concept within our profession that we're so anti-chiropractic. But take a look at the literature, people. Have a look at the literature and see what the literature says about chiropractic management of back pain, neck pain. There's actually quite a lot of positive studies out of Europe with large, large numbers in support of that. So, you know, in sports medicine, I work with all of these people on a daily basis, and I have to. My acupuncturist, and I do dry needling, but I still work with an acupuncturist, and we're a team. You know, I joke and I say we have to manage our physicians, but on some level, that's true. You know, we have to send our patients to the physician that we know is going to give the appropriate intervention, because to a lot of physicians, you know, every nail needs a hammer, and if a hammer is what they've got, then they see a nail, you know. So we
want to cut, and PTs want
to
PT.
Absolutely. And as PTs, we need to be better than that. We need to say, this is not a physical therapy problem. This needs surgical intervention. Not after a 30-day trial of physical therapy. That's a load of garbage. We are better than that. If you can't tell your patient the first day when they come in what the likelihood that physical therapy is going to be successful, you're not an expert. You need to be better than that. It needs to be, this is not going to get better with physical therapy. This needs surgical intervention, and this is the guy you need to go and see. And that's how I think we need to be. We need to be better.
So can I find my own way of doing things in school, or do I need to have that year or two after school of practicing on my own without a net to find my own way of how I do things?
I think it's really hard while you're in school. And one of my students that I had in the training room in Georgetown, he's been in various programs finishing his final year in PT school. He called me the other day, and I've taught him my paradigm. And he's frustrated right now because he's being told by his tutors in various other places that, you know, he's cleared the lumbar spine because their range of motion is full, and therefore why would he treat the lumbar spine for this quad injury or this calf injury or this plantar fascia problem? And he's frustrated because I've just taught him the exact opposite of that, that you need to continue to look there, that just having a look at range of motion isn't full. I think it is hard when you're a student because there is an expectation to perform within the paradigm of the person that is mentoring you and tutoring you. And whether that's right or wrong, that's always going to be the case. I think the challenge on us as professionals is to try to look at our own limitations and not to apply those to our students, and to hopefully give our students the opportunity to help develop their own paradigms. I think that's hard for us to do in a lot of cases. But I think that, you know, we should take ownership of that as people who are tutoring and mentoring, don't you think, Sess?
I agree.
But I think having that extra year out and seeing patients, and I say, you know, there's an old quote that I like to use: experience is not in seeing much, but in seeing wisely. And I really like that because it says that if you go home after the end of every day and you kick back on the couch and you put on the football game and you grab a beer and you don't think about any patient that you saw that day, you could see as many patients as you like over a 20 or 30 year career and know less than somebody who's 2 years out. But if you go home every day and you think about those patients, and people ask me, how did I learn to read an MRI? Where did you learn to read an MRI? Well, I stayed back in my clinic till 9 o'clock at night and I put the MRI up and I looked at research papers and I looked at the anatomy book and I went over it and I went over and I spent time with my radiologist and I talked to my orthopedic surgeon and I went into the OR and I looked at the anatomy. That's how I learned to read an MRI.
And that's not seen as being too pushy. That's not seen if a student were going out of his way like that, because I think a lot of times students hold back because of that.
No, that's excellence. So that's the difference. So we're talking about excellence. If you want to be excellent, it's not a 9-to-5 job. It's just like the rest of your life, right? If you want to be excellent at something, if you do, you know, what kind of activities do you do, right?
Triathlon, Ironman, right.
Right? If you want to be excellent at that, you can't just do it on the weekends.
Right.
You can't just do it on, you know, once a month, right? You have to be excellent every day. You have to train every day. You got to have it on your mind. And that's how being excellent in your profession is, just like everything else in your life. You have to be excellent every day. And you have to look at your patients as people, right? So if we want to transform society, if we want to, you know, improve the human experience, we can't just leave it at 5 o'clock. We've got to live it. You have to be passionate about it. You have to live it. You have to look at those people. It's like dating. You have to get to know them. You have to get to know their likes, their dislikes, their strengths, their weaknesses in their bodies. You can't just look at one thing like range of motion and say, oh, that's it. You got to understand their MRs. You got to understand their psychosocial issues. You have to understand their how their family history plays in. You have to understand how all the rest of the diagnostic movement, the functional movement things that you're doing with them, their forward flexion test, their squat, their all the things that you're looking at as a diagnostician and their movement patterns, you have to look at those critically and integrate all that data. So you have to triangulate the data.
Seth, are you giving me dating advice after?
You're not supposed to date the patients, right?
No. Definitely.
But just get to know them as much as that dating. Okay, good. But don't date your patients.
Don't date your patients.
People used to ask me, though, in my clinic, they say, how did you choose your staff? You know, and the number one way I chose my staff is people would come in for interviews and I'd be like, look, here we live, eat, sleep, and breathe sports physical therapy, physiotherapy. If this is not for you, this means staying back late. This means working with teams on weekends. This means, you know, going above and beyond. If this is not for you, then this place is not for you. And some people would call me up and they would say, you know what, I've thought about it overnight and this isn't for me. I would say that I could never figure out how to choose a reception staff member based on their resume, but I never picked a bad physical therapist. I never picked a bad physiotherapist because I chose them based on their passion.
But I think that also speaks to the mentorship aspect that you want the next generation to be better than you. So we want you to be better than we are, to come out and to find, you know, what your paradigm is and to be better than us. So you have to want that. So I think we have to change, not only be good mentors to that 1 to 5 years out, but we also have to be willing to change the way we mentor to be better mentors, to want the next 10 years, the next 15 years to be better than now.
All right, different question, specialization. If I know I like sports, I'm a dude, I think I would like to do sports PT. Do you recommend someone doing that right out of school? Do you recommend them doing something more general and then specializing later? What are your suggestions?
I have to talk out of my own personal experience that throughout school, I actually kept a very open mind. In fact, we just had a conversation earlier tonight where I said that I was, in my final year, I was contemplating doing a master's in cardiothoracic. What I realized was that I was more interested in the medicine than I was in the physiotherapy aspect of cardiothoracics. And that I felt that that wasn't really doing justice to my career as a physiotherapist. And when I got out, I knew that I wanted to work in sports. And I actually held out on getting a job. I opted not to take a job at the local hospital or do the things that a lot of my colleagues did. I held out on getting a job in private practice where I could work in sports. I took, you know, some voluntary positions with different sporting teams and things like that to get my experience in sports. And I went straight into that area. I don't regret that. I don't think for me that was the wrong way to go. But I think it's an individual thing. I would never put that on somebody else. I would never say to somebody else, this is the way you should go. I'm very happy with the choices that I made early in my career. You know, and I got a little bit lucky. I got to work with a professional basketball team 1 year into my career and things like that that I, you know, maybe didn't deserve to do based on my knowledge base or my ability level, but that it gave me an immense amount of experience. But, you know, I would not put that on somebody else. I think everyone has to find their own path in life, in their career and everything. I think it's really up to you to find your own path, and I would never suggest that.
I agree. Individual differences, right? So the way you've come up to be in physical therapy school is very different than the way I came
right,
up.
Sure.
Right? I got my orthopedic specialist pretty early on in my career. So that was the path that was right for me. But I think for each person, it's a different path. So maybe, you know, residency is right for you. Maybe you applied for a residency. Maybe some people identify early on that they want to be in women's health and they do a residency in women's health. But other people, you know, maybe it takes them a little bit longer to figure out what their paradigm is, what their niche is, what they're interested in. And so I think with Scott, I agree. It's individual differences based on your experience and your paradigm.
I was hoping you guys would disagree so you could fight. We could have a bar fight.
I would love to fight.
The PT Pinecast has not had a bar fight yet in its history, and it would be good.
We should have brought Carrie Paglioni into this
discussion.
She would
totally always disagree with us.
Yeah, we could absolutely
just for the sake of disagreeing.
She got thrown out of the bar.
I hate it when
the reason that I started a podcast like this is conversations that we had with you guys, and that's the kind of talk that I know students are kind of they're wanting
thirsty.
To have. They're thirsty for it. So we appreciate people like you guys who go out of their way to make sure students who are coming into the profession know what we're getting into and know what's expected of us. And I think what you guys had gotten into was we're supposed to be experts and we should live up to that. And if we can't, we shouldn't be here. So we appreciate you guys taking your time out for the PT Pinecast.
Glad to be a part.
Thank you.
I'm out of vodka, so I'm going to go reload
more
the bar.
Vodka.
Scott and Cecily, thank you guys very much. We appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
The PT Pinecast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. Our lawyers made us read that. The PT Pinecast. Should he be drinking?
Yep.